Huh? You ready?
Yeah. We're on.
Okay. So, I am going to call us to order in our role as board supervisors, and we're here tonight to discuss the bids of Richland 20 and present the basic, the preliminary reclassification schedule. But the first item on our agenda is to present the bids for Drainage District Richland 20. Kimberly.
Yeah, in front of you, I hope the bid tabulation that we put together. The bid opening was last Tuesday, October 18th at 10 a.m. And we received five bids. Lodge Construction out of Clarksville, Minger Construction out of Jordan, Minnesota, Ritchie from Eldora, Graff from Toledo, Synergy from Bondurant. Receiving five bids is good. Our estimate they came at for Division 1, 2, and 3 work came at or near our estimate. However, for Division 4, you can see our estimate was somewhat off.
And Division 4, so that everybody's clear, is the culvert under the railroad tracks.
That is the work in the Union Pacific Railroad right-of-way. That includes not only the steel culvert, 108-inch round steel culvert with a 1.5-inch wall thickness as specified by the Union Pacific. It also includes the drop structure that goes in front of that collects the surface water and directs it into that culvert, as well as the tile water that the district's main tile will be connected into.
And as I understand it, Kent, we have an agreement or a preliminary agreement with the UP to pay up to $150,000 on this part of the contract. Is that accurate with where we are today?
There's a draft agreement that's only a starting point, as I understand, that the railroad has put together and sent to the district here for the district attorney or county attorney to examine and respond back to. Obviously, that is one of the issues with that agreement of the amount, and I think I believe that was based on our estimate. They came up with that amount from our estimate and recent conversations with the railroad. They understood that and believe that our estimate was going to be low, so that was no surprise to them. I hope that isn't an issue in this agreement. Certainly they've agreed to pay for the cost in that agreement, what I've read through, and I think the attorney needs to examine that closely, the liabilities, questions that are in there, and I can work with the attorney in getting that finalized.
Okay. Yeah, so Darren, you visited with the county attorney a little bit, and get somewhere that we can pick it up on Mike, maybe the one right in front of Scott, we can pick it up. But you visited with the county attorney, and what is your understanding of where we are today?
Yeah, they did review it today, and they had some comments. I see most of the comments pretty minor. I had a comment about the $150,000. They weren't aware of the dollars and more, so they didn't pick that out. But let's see, their comments. That's minor. I can work out that with you. Just some spec issues. What about the... Does it must be completed within 6 months?
Yeah, that possible. I had that red line too. That would be, according to our contract documents, that is July 1st of 2017. So I would change that 6 months to July 1st of 2017.
Okay. All right, so as I understand it, we have 35 days from when we open the bids to make a decision on either awarding a contract or rejecting all bids. So as I do calculation, we've got somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 days.
November 22nd, I think, is the date I figured from bid opening.
November 22nd is what we got. So
unless there can be agreed upon to extend that, with the contract.
And so where I'm going to have some real heartburn is I don't believe we have enough information to award a bid tonight without knowing what our agreement with the railroad looks like. And so what I would ask Darren and Kent, for you guys to visit with County Attorney Jessica Reynolds as soon as possible. I've checked with her already. She has free time tomorrow. If you guys can find time to visit with her, and let's get moving on a full hard agreement with the railroad, because sitting here today, we can't say to the landowners in the district what this would cost them, because we don't know what portion the railroad's going to agree to pay them.
Well, I mean, they've agreed that, you know, Iowa Code Section 468.111 applies to this, and that they are responsible for payment of the cost. They have limited it to not leave it wide open
right. For
what their cost may be, and at $150,000, I think, based on that original estimate, which was low, I would recommend that cost be somewhere in the neighborhood of 110%. So of the bid price to allow,
and the bid price for that portion is what our low bid price for that is
$330,700.
Yeah, and so if we want to have an agreement where they agree to pay up to $375,000, we're probably in the ballpark.
Right.
But we need to work our way. What I'm suggesting, and you guys need to weigh in on this, I'm suggesting that I'm not comfortable awarding any bid tonight until we work through that. And since that's the first item on our agenda, I just want us to deal with that.
Yeah, if you don't have the railroad in on this on locked in, you have no business.
Well, the nice part is we do have the railroad engaged. We just don't have a final agreement yet with the railroad.
Any other issue? Have you heard back from them? Are they okay with the low bidding contractor? Did they tell you that yet?
I don't think they're concerned with that lodge construction. They're most concerned with the subcontractor that was to do the work within that right of way, and that is the driller. And via email, we have received approval from the railroad for that. They said they were okay.
So they're good with the subcontractor if we can put the whole deal together.
Yes.
Okay. So required. Drainage district trustees, it requires no action from us if we're not going to award or reject bids tonight. We still have until November 22nd to choose to take action on those. So
are we contemplating at some point after the conversation with the attorney and getting back in clarification with the railroad of maybe calling another meeting prior to the 22nd?
We would have to reconvene as Drainage District Trustees in order to award the bids. And, Scott, what kind of turnaround time do you need on that?
There are no date deadlines. It's not 20 days prior or anything like that. I talked to Kent about this yesterday, I think. And he doesn't feel that it needs to be another evening meeting like this if he's not done today.
Okay,
so what kind of notification then do we need to have with the landowners prior to the special meeting that we will have to award or possibly award the bid?
I think just our normal notification like we do for board meetings, 24 hours. We don't need to be able to anything. We certainly could.
Okay.
But we wouldn't have to. It doesn't have to be 20 days out. We can mail it.
Okay.
5 days.
So
we
what
have a lot of time for the mail to get to them.
But where I'm going with this is for the ones that are sitting here, hearing the conversation and so forth, hopefully they can kind of see one of the reasons that we're reluctant to award that right now because of the unknown with the amount of dollars the railroad is having, even though we have some assurance according to code that, you know, they're going to be expected to pay their fair share. However, I'm sure that's in line with the total. But when it comes down to setting a final date of awarding the contract, and I would assume we would be hearing something regarding the possible time that they would undertake the work and hopefully notification to landowners at whatever time and place that took place. I guess what the most, to me, the most important thing is all along we try to be as open and as transparent with the landowner as through every step of the process. And I want to make sure that that is still done either via conference call or some way for those that are interested to be updated about where we are. That's my concern.
Absolutely, and I think it's completely fair. The nice part is in this process, if you recall Marshall's story one, there's at least two more full-on meetings and maybe three more full-on meetings as we go through this process. So you'll go on, once we finish consideration of what we're doing with the bids tonight, we're going to go on to the preliminary reclassification schedule, which will tell everybody, okay, Here's what your portion would be. But it's not approved tonight. It's not approved till we get to the end of the project.
That's correct.
Okay. Good.
All right, so I just want to make sure we're clear that we're taking no action tonight on either awarding or rejecting bids. We're going to refer all of this to the county attorney to work with the UP so that we can have some hard and fast documents in front of us before such time as we take that action.
Yes.
You're good, Marty?
Yeah, I like the fact that you've got the turnaround time with Darren and Ken tomorrow with, you know, Jessica speaking with the railroad. My question, though, at this point, will this change any of the construction times that we've been talking about? And, you know, I think people are kind of building it in their heads when this is actually going to start and when it's going to finish. Is this going to change any of that?
It shouldn't, no. Again, we don't really have a hard and fast start time from the contractor yet until we award and have a contractor on board and know what his schedule is. All he has to do is complete the work by July 1st of 2017.
Do I recall hearing that we had talked about there's a possibility of some work being done this year, or is it all going to take place next year?
Absolutely. There is that possibility, again, depending on the contractor's other work. They can start now, or they can wait. If they believe they can get it done next spring before July 1st, they can wait till then.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So moving on, we are now to present the preliminary reclassification schedule for Grange District Richland 20.
As requested by the board, we prepared some preliminary reclassification schedules. You guys have a copy of these. Okay, great. And tonight we're going to go through that process. Again, this is just a preliminary reclassification based on estimated cost, total project cost, not only including the bid prices, but also the engineering, the right-of-way costs, any attorney costs that may are all included on the reclassification schedule. So one thing I can guarantee you, that this is likely not what your assessment's going to be. It will be close, but it won't be exact unless by some chance it is exact. it should be close in relation to one another. But this also has not been reviewed by commissioners. There's a process that goes through. Three commissioners are appointed by the board, one being the engineer and two other disinterested landowners outside of the district. And they would review the reclassification schedules, and then a separate hearing would be held, at which time the landowners have time for their input, and the board would then approve or amend and approve the reclassification report at that time. The district was classified originally in 1910. So this is well over 100 years old, this current existing schedules. So it is time. And at that time, there's not a lot of details in the code on how reclassification is done. Particularly back then, they placed a lot more emphasis on wetness. Now we use five general factors, as we've got displayed here, and I'll go through some briefly here soon. But So Generally now there's a process that is agreed to by engineers within the state that these are some general factors that are used throughout in a lot of different projects throughout the state. Each one has their own little quirks that might do something a little different in their process, but this is generally agreed to throughout the state. As you can see, these factors, the first one is benefited acres. How many acres do you have within the watershed of the facility? Those on the outside edge of the watershed are being assessed for only those acres within that watershed boundary. We also take into effect the need for drainage. Higher ground doesn't need drainage as much as the lower ground. And to come to that, to determine that factor, we use soil types, certainly Okoboji soils and soils are more need of drainage than the Clarion Websters that are at the tops of hills typically. And proximity to outlet is another factor that is basically how close are you to the facility. Those parcels right on the facility have more benefit than those that are farther away from the facility. And those farther away have a need to get their water there, so there are other costs. So that is actually a ratio of the total of the length of the facility that they use to the total length that water has to travel to get to the outlet. That's the mathematical formula for it. Facility use factor is another one. That is just the ratio of the cost of the portion of the facility that parcel uses. Those at the very upper end of the facility use all or most of the facility, so they would have a higher factor than those at the lower portion who only use a small portion. Then another factor is runoff factor. It takes into account those hard surface areas that cast water more readily and don't allow infiltration, much as agricultural land. So roadways, gravel roads, hard surface roads, as well as railroads, and the ballast involved with that, are given a different factor for those areas. With that, I think I'm going to turn it over to Tyler here. He's going to go into much more detail in this process and that we use a lot of it's done with GIS and computers. So it's a lot of mathematical stuff that's done on computers, and it's a lot easier.
Thanks, Kent. Evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Tyler Conley worked extensively a lot on this project with Kent. Did a majority of the calculations for this preliminary reclass. And so that is why Kent has turned it over to me to, in more detail, explain exactly how all of this process works. Starting with this first slide, this is, of course, Richland 20 here with the outlet, and I apologize, I left my forgot my laser pointer. The outlet at the southern end of the district, of course. And then this highlights all of the facilities as well as the major watershed of the district. Now, as Kent stated, a lot of this work is done in GIS, utilizing primarily LIDAR data. I've got a close-up here of the project. I kind of expected a few more people to be here to have to explain this to, but all right. So as we get into this, we use LIDAR data, which for those that don't know is elevation data acquired by the state of Iowa when they flew. LIDAR is obtained from an airplane. They fly over sections of land. They shoot a laser to the ground, and it records how fast that laser bounces back to the plane. So then they know the elevation
of anywhere that that laser hit. Now, typically, that is said to be accurate within about 6 inches, half a foot or so. In layers, areas with less relief, it's closer to 3 or 4 inches. So it's a pretty handy tool, especially when you're starting to model watersheds like we have here. That information can be turned into a DEM map, a digital elevation model, which is what's displayed currently. It is basically a blanket map that has all of the information, all of the elevation information input onto it. On this one we have it, you can color ramp it however you'd like, but the one here, the reds, the deepest, darkest reds are the highs, and the deepest, darkest blues are the lows. So you can see along the river areas you've got your lows, and then further up into the fields on the north is where you see most of your reds and then everything in between. Now, Tim, if we go up a slide. This is the very start of the reclassification process. And they're difficult to see on this at this distance, but on this map there are a series of purple lines that represent the drain paths of the entire district. So what this modeling system does is it draws arrows from the highs to the lows and associates water flow with it. So anywhere that there is a purple line on that map is where water has transformed into shallow concentrated flows and has started to flow towards the outlet.
So you can track on this map what would happen if you put a drop of water anywhere in there.
Absolutely.
How it would flow through.
Absolutely. Anywhere that water hits within that major red line on the outside flows through one of those channels to the outlet. And we could track it from anywhere. And that creates a system of sub-watersheds within that watershed that are all represented by a drain line, which is then how the district gets broken up further. So that covers our first factor, which is area. Any parcel of land within this watershed has an area that can be calculated and used as the very first factor.
And those flow paths, as they're defined, go through there, are used through with all these different other factors as well that will show your ratios of distances and that.
How far you are from hitting the first district facility. And
everything is measured off of these flow paths.
Okay.
And the flow paths, that DEM has been manipulated by the input of all the facilities as well as any water channel that we are aware of, such as culverts or bridges. The LIDAR doesn't pick that information up, so we have to tell it water can flow through there. So this is, to our knowledge, the way water flows through this district.
Right, but this does not recognize private pattern tiles.
It does not, and that's why I wanted to bring that up, because...
Yep.
And again, like Kent said, this has not been reviewed by commissioners, and if that information comes to light, this model, of course, can be altered to include private tile.
For example, there could be private tile that have tiled into the district, or in the opposite, it tiled out
right.
As well.
We had one of those in Marshall Story 1 where somebody had... So their ground water would flow to the district, but they had their tile system flowing out of the district.
And if we find that out, we can make adjustments to the final, final schedule.
All right, moving on. Now we come to our second factor, which is wetness, which again is the need of the soil for drainage. This information is all based off of the statewide soil surveys that have been conducted and updated, I believe, a couple times throughout their existence to determine the soils of every tract of land in the state of Iowa. So this information, because of all the information that is within every soil, can be broken down to a wetness factor. Those wetness factors, they come in four different groups: high, low, wet, and swamp. High being your least drainage required, and swamp, of course, being your most need for drainage soils, all having a factor from 20 to 100. 100 being the wettest and 20 being the driest, with 50 and 75 in between them. Now on this map, it's a ways from me, but I know that 100s are all the blues, the 50s are grays, 20s are yellows, and the 75s are reds, I believe.
So if we were looking at this 200 years ago, the blue, would it be reasonable to assume that the blues up there would have been prairie potholes and things like that?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you can see actually on the right-hand side of this map, along where the river bed would be up on the kind of the northern end, there is actually blue soils through there that follow that river channel through there.
Because the blues are the old Kabogi type soils.
Right.
That are, you know,
that if we're not draining them, we're not growing.
Right.
Okay.
So, like any of our other factors to come, all of that needs to be, because we're using an acre factor per parcel, all of this information needs to be broken down into a per parcel factor. So everything is then weighted. It's a weighted average where we go from this to this map. So all the wetness within a parcel gets taken times the area that it encompasses within a parcel, and then summed up and divided by the total area to get your weighted wetness factor. So all of these numbers, that is your average wetness for your parcel of land.
And another thing I failed to mention earlier is there's three schedules. We've got one schedule for the main open ditch, which is just a short portion of the ditch from the outlet
right
to just where those west and east branch come together. And there's a separate schedule for the west branch as well as the east branch.
Yeah, and the important there, Kent, is that right now, if anything happens in this entire drainage district, everybody participates, whether it's even so if something happens up in the far northeast corner, and you're in the far northwest corner, you don't use any of those facilities over there on the far northeast, but you're still participating. If once we get past this, you'll only participate in the parts of the district that you actually use.
That is correct, and that is the big appeal to reclassification. So now all of this has been broken down to a wetness per parcel. Nothing, of course, can be over. Nothing can be wetter than a 100, and nothing can be drier than a 20. But they're all in relation to one another by parcel now.
And so if I had a 40-acre tract of ground in this, and 20 acres of it happened to be the 100, the wettest, and 20 acres happened to be on a hill and it was the driest, you would average those two 20s to get to my 40, and I would be a 60 is where you'd send me out.
Correct.
Okay.
Right. Right. If breaking it down to a simple example.
You're just putting all the inputs in. Yeah, I mean, I know
right,
I made it
right,
over
right,
simple.
Right.
Good.
All right. So then we come to our proximity. And now it may be a good time. Kent, do you want to go to the west branch? Some of these, because the main facility is so short, it's difficult to get a really good... Did it not load?
Uh-oh.
We may have killed it.
Okay. Well, we have paper.
We do have paper copies. Yeah, nothing wrong with...
paper, in a lot of ways, the paper copies may be easier because, you know, I see a bunch
right,
of light.
Yeah.
These are hard to see.
Yeah, let's actually... Excuse us.
We'll go to
I don't know where the best way.
So you guys come up here.
Yeah.
Set it right here where Mike said. You guys come up here. So turn it around this way. Can you turn the lights back on, Scott? I'm serious. You guys come all the way around, and we're all going to sit here and watch this.
Right. Yep.
This is the beauty of having three people here.
All right. So we'll go back to where I thought you were, guys.
Yeah. Make yourself comfortable.
Sometimes there's nothing wrong with
that chair.
Nothing wrong with good old analog here sometimes.
I can maybe put it.
Proximity sniper, and I went one too far. I need one less there. All right, here we go. Yep, proximity factor. So now, because like I stated, that main facility that we have created is so short, it's hard to get a really good picture. And these color palettes. Now that we are just dealing with one facility that is much longer than the main combined facility, it's a lot easier to tell what's going on. So now we're to proximity. Proximity, as Kent stated, was how near to the outlet are you, or how much closer was it brought to you because of the project. And it is a ratio of the total drainage length, or the portion of the facility you use divided by your entire drainage length, again, based on those drain lines, the very first drain lines we saw. So the closer to the facility you are, you get a 1. And then as you go further away, your proximity drops to these lines up here, which are essentially 13% of what they were down here.
Okay.
Now, that's because these people up here have to find more ways to get their water there. It doesn't get there as fast. You're not utilizing it as readily as someone down here. So, with that, that can also be brought to a per parcel proximity. So then you can see, compared to the parcel next to you, just what exactly your proximity is. So you start with, it doesn't actually appear to be a solid 1 on any of these.
Huh?
But then as it goes up, it's all based on a percentage of 1. So you've got your 13s, your 20%, your 32%, such and so forth.
Yeah, so the 13% are the ones that have to move their water the furthest before it hits the facility, and a 1 would be somebody who doesn't have to move it at all.
Right, if their water just flows into the facility.
Keep in mind that the facility is
just talking about the open
this portion right here.
To the railroad tracks.
Right.
Okay.
And again, in the final schedules, we'll have a separate schedule for the main tile, any lateral tiles,
right,
all of those separate facilities. But for this preliminary, we weren't doing any work there, so we didn't. That's not pertinent for this at this time. Until for future maintenance, it would be important, and we will finish that in that final report.
Sure, and what's important to our landowners in the area is once all is said and done, you're only going to pay for repairs. This is after the fact. You're only going to pay for future repairs that occur on part of the district that you actually run water through. You're not going to pay for things that aren't happening where you are sending water.
That's exactly right. If something were to happen over on this east main or any of these laterals after this, no one over in this west watershed would be responsible for any of that.
Right now, you're responsible
right
for
anything that happens. Yeah. Right now, if your water flows to that point and it breaks anywhere, you're on the hook for your portion of it.
Right.
All right. Now, to use, how much of the facility do you use? Quite a bit, quite a different color line here. Again, we stopped where our project ended.
Right. So anyone upstream of where that project ends use 100% of the facility. So they get a one of the percentage. And that is based on the dollar amount to construct this facility to that point. So essentially, everyone that has a one would be paying on the 100% of the money that it took to get there. Whereas these catchments in here have a 52, so they're just over half.
Right.
95s, and then down to your 11s and your 29s down near the end of the facility.
Because they're using so little of it.
Right, exactly. Essentially saying, since I don't use anything upstream of me, why should I be responsible for anything upstream of me? Again, this gets brought to a per parcel factor, and I don't know if I explained this, but it's brought to a per parcel because, as I stated, we were using an acre before, and all of these factors get multiplied by each other to, and we're coming to the point where we will get to units of benefit.
Right.
The last one we have, and it's not broken up by watershed because it doesn't, it isn't affected by area, is our runoff factor, which is essentially a land use factor. It's early in the presentation, but here it is. Agricultural land gets a one because it's just it's not above or below. That's the baseline is ag land. Anything with a harder surface gets an increased runoff factor, and any place that is retaining water, of course, gets a lower runoff factor. So your hard surface roads, your actual asphalt or concrete roads get a 1.6. Your gravel roads get a 1.3. The earthen road through here got a 1.2. And then
the railroad
also gets a 1.3.
So same as the gravel road.
Right. Because of the rock and ballast that they have. And they do shed water faster than ag land would.
And if we had a wetland out there, it would get less than a one.
It would get, we would have to review it, but typically those get about a 0.5 okay. for their detention of water. Mm-hmm. All right. So, once that has, all of those factors have been calculated, what we can do then is decide, multiply those factors together to get units of benefit. Now again, this is color ramped and it's a bit more sporadic with the coloring, but this has to do with your all the factors, your acres, your proximity, your use, your wetness, and your runoff. All multiplied together to get units of benefit. Now, to determine a classification, classifications are all based upon the highest units of benefit.
Right.
That will become a little bit clearer when I get to the classifications here on this page. Now, the classifications are based on your units of benefit divided by the highest unit of benefit times 100 to get a percentage.
Personally, the parcel with the highest units of benefit has a classification of 100. Okay. And every other parcel is compared
to that
parcel, to that highest.
So in this case, it would stand to reason that the person who is utilizing the entire district or entire facility that we're working on, but is closest to it, who has the wettest soil, is going to be the one that's going to be paying the most.
And it possibly has the most acres.
And in this case, it is one of the larger parcels as well, because the 100% falls right here at the the very first parcel of land upstream.
Just as you mentioned, that's the top of the facility, near the end of the facility, closest to it. Probably wetter soils.
But in this case, it just, you know, you don't always get this thing where the railroad's stopping the flow. He's also the gentleman who's holding all the water right now. I mean, you know, clearly getting this done is going to directly benefit him as much as anybody.
Him the most,
yeah,
by taking that water away.
Yeah.
And the reason the classification thing is a little different, that 100 classification, everybody is being compared to him is a little different, but you have to remember in how they did classification years ago, they were riding around on horses and saying, I think they didn't have computers, and they were saying, well, I think this parcel benefits the most, so we're going to give him the 100% classification. Then it was much easier. You have this parcel here. Well, he's probably benefiting half of what this guy is. We'll give him 50%. You know, that's generally how they did it back then. And they, that comparison thing made the classification process easier. It's not a percentage of the project that you're paying.
Right.
So, then just kind of a little few last housekeeping items here. We also represent a classification per acre. So that breaks it down to essentially your benefit compared to everyone around you based on the number of acres in that parcel.
It takes the size of the parcel.
Right. It takes the area essentially out of this equation. So then, again, it's all color ramped, red being the highest, and green being the lowest, all compared to, again, that 100%, or the not percent, 100 class. And then we have, just for landowner benefit, then the assessment and assessment per acre based on the classification.
Because,
or based on, right.
Based on our estimate of what this project
would cost.
Right.
And then the same process is done for the East Main and the East Main.
Right.
That generally describes process and
oh, we got we've got it all down.
I'm telling you. That's a quick version of it. And I haven't given this presentation a whole hell of a
lot. Yes,
this is the second one we've done, and there can't be many counties that have done two of these reclassifications in the last couple of years. Right? Have there been?
Oh, yeah, there's some districts up in Northwest that I would have.
What questions do you guys have?
They're becoming more and more popular because of the benefits that they provide landowners.
Right. Well, it's fair.
Right. It's the equitable and it's the ability to repeat. Because we can sit down and redo this and we would come up with the same results.
Well, if you put somebody different on the back of the horse, they might see something a little different.
That depends on what kind of horse.
That's right. Exactly right. You guys have questions as they go through this?
The only question I have, and this is purely from an educational perspective. So you've got the drainage ditches as you've done your calculation, but you also have to talk about those private
wells
that are not. How do those affect the flow, if you can calculate that?
You know, that really doesn't affect the flow. The sizing of tile is based on an area and drainage coefficient. It's the amount of water that can be drained from an area in a 24-hour period. one inch rain being drained in that in it would have being 1 inch rain being drained away in 24 hours is 1 inch drainage coefficient. And so the reclassification process is based on the fact that you have the opportunity to utilize the facilities to its fullest extent. Whether you do that, whether you pattern tile your field and take fullest advantage of that tile or not is up to you, but you have that opportunity. And it is assumed that, that you do that.
And you're paying for that opportunity.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you saying that if someone pattern tiles below you, that your water would get away just as fast?
It depends. Yeah, that's a difficult question. But keep in mind that pattern tiles are draining 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. They're draining all year long. So obviously anybody that has the opportunity to get their water to that outlet the quickest will benefit.
Right.
Whether that's by intakes or by the subsurface, additional subsurface drainage or some other means. If your water isn't getting to that main, you're not fully utilizing it.
Yeah.
A lot of people think that main tiles draw a lot of water. Well, they themselves are not intended to draw a lot of water. Even the big clay tiles, you know, they have a gap every 2 to 4 feet on these old clay tiles, and that gap was something like that. That doesn't draw a lot of water. And a lot of those get filled with clay and stuff. So you need to get the water from your pond or from your wet area to that main. And so that's kind of what this is like.
Once this is all implemented, I just have one question. How fast will the velocity of the water be at the end of the ditch coming into the next section of land? I've got pasture on each side there.
Where are you at?
Well, I'm looking
at... You're at the lower, very low.
Yeah, you go right across the road after that ditch goes under the bridge. I just want to know how much faster that water can be flowing, going down to a pasture. I know how fast it goes now when we get the heavy rains.
Yeah, I don't see that changing. I mean, we're not changing the quantity or flow of water. We're not changing what you're seeing. You know, we're not changing the rain patterns or anything like that. So the amount of water that's getting there is not changing.
Well, I know how fast that water moves across that land at the just above that ditch right now. And obviously, opening up that west line is going to make a significant difference compared to the east side. East side takes and moves a lot of water. So, now, I understand that. I'm just trying to be a little bit facetious. Say, okay, how much water am I going to have over a certain driveway out in the field at this point? But it's already 5 or 6 feet above.
Well, now, my thought process is probably premature, but let's assume that all of this is done, work is being done, and now that the county has entered into a maintenance agreement on, you know, the open ditches and other kinds of things and making sure that trees and other type of things is removed, that needs to be something factored in at some point. At what point do we have that type of discussion for this particular project? Do you see where I'm going with Joe Quaker and Tyler?
Yes,
in
sir.
Terms of one of the historical factors we've recognized is that landowners and drainage trustees over a period of years, things like this didn't really surface or it wasn't brought to our attention that we needed to step in and try to get things done, as we're finding out now. And so we have embarked upon a maintenance schedule, particularly when these open ditches and so forth could be impacted by, you know, cleaning out the trees or scrubs or whatever you call them. And so looking at some of these, at some point down the line, will that be a factor that we will need to have discussion about?
Yeah, well, it will, Wayne, because what we're talking about doing here is creating a new section of open ditch. And clearly you're going to want to maintain that. You're not going to want to let the trees grow up. But what we saw historically for Story County, and these guys can probably speak to this as much as anything, is for about 50 years, we didn't do much with our open ditch. They just kind of were there and they went, right? And if the farmer chose to take care of it, it got taken care of. And other than that, our county engineer would go out when there was a blowout or something like that, but we didn't spend a whole lot of time in the open ditch. Yeah, so you're 100% right.
And I don't know, do you guys have a tree maintenance
program
where you go out and spray trees?
We do now.
We put that in 5 years ago?
About 4 or 5, yeah.
So this is a world of the program, but this open ditch is relatively short compared to a lot of ours. And I think the landowners take pretty good care of this on their own because there wasn't a lot of trees in the open ditch where it is, except for right at the end.
The existing open ditch.
Right.
The new one's going to be, it's going to be brand new.
Right.
But we'll have to maintain them.
Okay.
Absolutely. Questions? Okay. Anything else we need to know tonight? So this is just intended to be the preliminary reclassification schedule. This is not final. You said it once. I'll say it again. This is not exactly what the charges are going to be, all said and done. But this should give people a pretty good idea of the direction that it's headed.
Mm-hmm.
It should be relatively close. Certainly, it gives a good ratio of where it's going to be in the total project cost once we know those final project costs.
All right, so then as we close it down tonight, we're counting on Kent, you and Darren to get with our county attorney, Jessica Reynolds, as soon as you can so that we can put some finalization on our agreement with the railroad. Then we're going to have to get back together in order to consider awarding a bid. Our current low bidder, I think this is appropriate to say, is Lodge Construction.
Right.
If we award bids, that's our low bidder at this point. We need to know, because what's not factored into any of this is the cost for that culvert, right? What you put in here, we're making the assumption that that's going to be borne by the railroad.
Absolutely, that should be the cost to the railroad.
And that would dramatically impact, if we're going to count on landowners to pay any of that, that would dramatically impact what this project scope is going to be.
There are reclassification, but they pay a portion of division.
Of everything else,
one,
sure.
Two and three,
but
well,
we're counting on them paying the full part of that culvert,
right,
installation.
Correct. Great.
Anything else for us tonight? I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thanks, guys.
Guys.
Kent, you're losing your touch. Can't believe it. Two people show up.
Three.